5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, and auf Wiedersehen, etc., etc. I don't know what's going on. We missed a show last week. Technical difficulties last week, which between you and me, listener, Xtina was too drunk to do the show. But hey, you know, she sobered up, hopefully, for this week, so we're on. And it is the new Panic Room episode 119, it says here, which is kind of exciting in its own way. And that was Staying Alive by the Bee Gees, which is painfully ironic considering that two out of the three are dead now. But hey, you know, I was going to say life goes on, but obviously not for those two, it doesn't. But anywho. And for anybody who missed the show last week, we're very, very sorry. And, well, obviously, Xtine was too drunk to be sorry, God bless her. But we're back in full effect now. So, and we missed it, so we're going to do it this week. Dina, how are you, my dear? Are you sober? Have you been drinking the cooking sherry again?
You know, I had a whole week to sober up, but it's Thursday again, and you know, I didn't get out of bed until even like I think it was like 1 p.m. when I finally crawled out of bed, and you know, I waited until at least 3 before I started drinking.
Wow, how did you function?
I know. It's Thursday, so it's the day that I let myself, you know, drink as much as I want. So, that was not my fault last week. That was technical difficulties because of stupid Blog Talk. Can I say that? I mean, are they going to, like, you know, rip us off the air?
Bearing in mind that they're the ones that are hosting the show through, I really wouldn't slag them off. Too much if I were you. You know, good old Blog Talk. Yes, we love thoughts and prayers. That's what I say. Thoughts and prayers, Blog Talk Radio. We love you.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
More importantly, Jesus loves you. I like to think. Speaking of Jesus, we were just talking before we came
God.
On air about... what do you mean, oh God?
Yes.
We were just talking about young people, and I like young people, don't you? And they who align themselves with the likes of, as a throwaway reference, Charles Manson or Hitler even, you know, and they think it's cool, and they paint swastikas on themselves. Oh, Charles Manson was a great guy and all the rest of it. No, he wasn't. And again, the argument is always going to be he never actually killed anybody. You'd probably find Adolf Hitler never personally killed anybody, except maybe in his days in the First World War. Anyway, but he never gassed any Jews and da 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 da. But because of him, millions of people died. Manson was the same. You know, he incited people to murder. You know, that was the kind of crazy guy he was. And of course, you get these people who are a generation apart from what happened then. who sort of hero worship this guy. And I mean, does this mean that, you know, my children's generation are going to grow up worshiping and hero worshiping Ted Bundy and John Wayne Gacy, yeah, and Jeffrey Dahmer? And you know, these are sick people. If you align yourself with these and you, oh, I identify with them, you're crazy. You have a fucking screw loose. Go see somebody. Or drink. Take a leaf out of Steven's book. Drink more.
I remember, you know, when I was in high school, and I was fascinated by the whole story. I remember reading Helter Skelter and thinking how, mm-hmm, you know, wow, this is fascinating in a really scary kind of way. But definitely I never I have friends on my on my Facebook that when he was sick and, you know, dying, they were like beside themselves. They were, you know, sad and you know, it was like a, you know, I'm gonna wear all black for Charles Manson and oh my God, he's dying. You know, I'm not a mean-spirited person, but I wasn't gonna shed a tear.
It's a whole thing. I mean, there's, you know, sick serial killers on death row who they get fan mail, they get marriage proposals, they get all the biggest people just worship these people. And there was just recently died, actually, Ian Brady. Again, I've mentioned Ian Brady and Myra Hindley on the show before. Back in the 60s, they abducted and murdered children and recorded them and audio. I mean, this is back in the day before videotapes, really. They missed being hung by, I think, about a year. Had they been committed and caught a year before, they'd have been hung. Ian Brady, we used to make fun of him. He went on hunger strike, yeah? And he was on hunger strike for like 40 years. The world's worst hunger striker, to be honest.
I remember talking about this, yes.
you know, Ian, if you're going to do that, you know, really, you could probably last, without food, you could probably last maybe 6 weeks, maybe 2 months tops.
Yeah, 40 years is pushing it then.
40 years is taking the piss a little bit. But yeah, again, and he used to get marriage. He used to get, you know, had fans. I mean, Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper. Again, I've read up. You know, again, I don't worship these, but I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated by the mindset of the serial killer. You know, and Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper, was still in jail. Obviously, he got his whole life term for murder. He was actually convicted of murdering 13 women. They believe he murdered a lot more. He attempted to murder another God knows how many, 5 or 6, I think it was. And again, you know, and all these women are throwing themselves at him, and he's just like, bad idea. You know, he's in prison for killing women, and you want to marry him? Well, maybe it's Darwinism. Marry him. You go right ahead, love. You marry him, and let's see how this works out for you. You know, it's like, happy anniversary, darling. I bought you a hammer, he'd say. So.
I saw something the other day on Facebook, and it was...
you spend too much time on Facebook.
I do.
You need to get out
But it
more.
Had been... I forget how many years that it said, but it was like the... however many years anniversary of when the Amityville, what's the DeFeo dude, like shot and killed his whole family.
Yes, indeed.
And
yes.
that had me looking up to me, that was so scary. That was so creepy to me. I mean, okay, how do you shoot your entire family? There was like, what, 5 family members or something
there
like
was,
that?
I think there was, 5 or 6. He killed 4 of them, wasn't he? Oh, he killed the parents. And he has it,
and
2 sisters?
2 brothers and 2 sisters,
think. Oh, right, so okay, yeah, wow. But yeah, they say how he managed to shoot them all in the beds. They were all found in the beds, all asleep. And he shot all of them.
All laying on their stomachs. It makes no sense
nobody,
at all.
Nobody
Nothing.
Woke up.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I guess is what started the whole supernatural.
Paranormal thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, nobody was saying actually to anything really paranormal up until the Lettes moved in there, as far as what I was reading the other day. But no, that's totally creepy, that whole thing. It really is.
I remember going to see that movie back in, I think, 1970, was it 78, 79? And it scared the crap. I saw it on the big screen, and it was, even now, I mean, the remake was terrible, I have to say, but that original one, even now, I mean, you know, the kids singing sort of background theme tune phase, the whole thing, and it wasn't particularly gory, but it was it was so incredibly well done. It was better than most of the things that come out now, but it was good. That was good. Which reminds me. So I think since we last spoke, you've taken my recommendation up, and you've been watching The Haunting of Hill House. What do you think?
I love it. As a matter of fact, I can't wait. Basically, the only time I get to really sit down and watch things are the weekend. So I'll be watching again Saturday and Sunday, I'm hoping. And I made it to finished episode 5, I think.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. Maybe something like that, 4 or 5, and I love it. I do. It's got some awesome jump scares, and it's eerie. I mean, there were times I was going, no, 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 and I was like so freaked out, and my heart was like, you know, in my throat. It was amazing. I really enjoyed the whole
atmosphere, and obviously there's a lot of tension between the family. That is great as a backdrop. Because it just builds on that, but the whole tension, and it is so incredibly beautifully shot. You know, the acting, everything is just—it's a perfect storm. The whole thing is brilliant. I love it.
I'm not spoiled.
I finished it, and me and my daughter, we're disappointed now. So what do we do now? we watched it over a week or so, and it was like, wow, you know. But we need to find something else now.
Too, and there's not going to be, I mean, that's it, right? There's not going to be another season or anything. I hope they don't
because
it
finishes perfectly. I think to try and milk something else out of it would spoil it, really. But then again, that's what they do here. That's what the TV people do. Yeah. They get a hit and they just milk it until it dies a horrible withering death, which is jolly. But anywho, on that note, so if you follow this guest number one, on that note, Xtina, what have we got on the show this evening?
Okay, see, and we never talk about this ahead of time because now I am never sure. Do I, you know, is this where I announce both guests that we have tonight, or is this just
when I ask, we really should discuss this. Off the air, but we're here again. When I ask you that, you tell me a general overview of the show.
Okay.
Then I will say, and our first guest is, then you introduce the first guest. I hit the little button for the studio cheer. Sorry, no, the actual studio crew here cheer. And then we bring the first guest on. So do you want me to write that down for you, or have we got that now?
I think I got it good. This week. You might have to explain it again next week.
But we're not on next week, so it's going to be 2 weeks because it's Thanksgiving.
Oh, man.
It'll be two weeks. You will totally forget. You forgot what your name is by then.
I know. I will. Okay, on the show tonight, episode, 119? That's awesome. We have USA Today bestselling author M. Never and horror author Andrew Piazza. I think I've said that right, Piazza.
Fantastic.
That looks amazing.
And okay, so are you ready? Are you ready? Okay, so hey, Xtina, who's our first guest this evening?
Our first guest is USA Today bestselling author M. Never. Woo!
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. You'd think after, you know, we're on show 119, Xtina would have sort of got it by now. clearly not. So I do apologize.
That doesn't make perfect.
No, it doesn't. I mean, how many more shows do we have to do before she gets this? You know, I mean, it's funny, actually. I've been editing it's actually a self-help book recently. And the guy talked about mixed metaphors and quote unquote, it's not rocket surgery.
Yes.
And that is my favorite malapropism of ever, I have to say. So anyway, M. Never. And again, we never know. There's somebody whose first name is just initial. Not sure what your parents were thinking. Lazy. I think. We never know if it's going to be a, who it is. So do we call you M or can I call you Maureen?
You, definitely not Maureen, but you can stick with M, that's fine, or Marissa, one or the other.
Oh, no, M's fine, although I don't know okay. what you've got against Maureen, but, you know, whatever.
This is not my name.
Moving on.
I didn't think, I didn't even know it was Melissa. I like Melissa, that's cool. Yeah, but M, that's, you know, very, I love the name.
I like Maureen, so.
I have an Aunt Maureen. I'll let her know.
There is that. It's funny. I have an Auntie Maureen as well. She's awesome. She's awesome.
Mine is too.
There you
it
go.
Must be the name.
So, M is, who, again, as featured in the James Bond films, obviously, is here to talk to us about her book, Trinity, which is MMF Menage Romance, which sounds right up my street, actually. Tagline, two seductive strangers, one scandalous night, a trinity of temptation. Tell us more. Well, you don't have to. I mean, you know, you're on the show, Em. You may as well join in.
I'm all in. It's a novella, so it's a short, quick read. Definitely very sexy, but it's also very emotional, and the characters are just really fun and down to earth and relatable. So, you know, it's just like one of those reads you can cuddle up and get done really quick, and hopefully be satisfied in a multiple. Wave in the end.
Yeah. In a multiple
very,
ways. I like that.
Multiple ways.
Very, very tastefully put. Very tastefully put, I have to say.
Are you saying that this novella I might, you know, want to read like one handed? I mean, is that what you're
No, stop it.
You know, holding the Kindle and a cup of coffee. That kind of like one handed, absolutely.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Oh, thank you. I just next scene to lower the tone, for goodness sake.
I think dear she's Lord. Fibbing, by the way, but we'll leave it at that. That's awesome, though. I'm definitely seeing a lot of the menage thing right now. A lot. I mean, is it like it's totally different than like the cheating ones? So because everybody is aware of it,
mm-hmm.
right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That's
yes.
the
job. Yeah. Everybody.
If you're all there together, then yeah, everybody's gonna know. To be honest.
James,
yes,
really.
Three sides of consensuality.
Awesome. I think, you know, I'm trying to think even who it was. It was a long time ago. I read, and I think there were more, the Browns. I want to say Brown was their last name, but there was this whole series, and the one girl ended up in a relationship with, like, two other guys. And I know that, you know, when I first read what it was going to be about, I was like, I just don't think. That this is going to be for me. But then by the time I finished with a story and, you know, she actually had, like, a love between all three of them, I was like, this is kind of cool. I mean, still, it would not be for me. But, I mean,
it does happen in real life. You know, I read articles about it all the time, you know, and for some people it works. And I'm a big live and let live kind of guy. You know, if whatever floats your boat, as long as everybody's happy, you go for it. You
definitely.
That's what
definitely.
I say. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Hence my book.
Yeah.
Right.
Brilliant.
Right. So I always want to know from, you know, any of the authors that we have in the show, when you're not writing, who do you like to read?
You know, it's funny. I used to read a ton of books all the time. And once you get into this business, I feel like you sort of taper off. So... In recent times, I've read a lot of Nicole Edwards. I love Helena Hunting, Jay Huss, basically just, you know, like those big indie authors that have so much like influence, you know, on the rest of us. Because it's so much fun to look into their world and then sort of jump back into your own and not key similarities, but, you know, follow down the same kind of path. So they're three of my big, my favorites.
Awesome. No, I know that several years ago I was never without a book. I mean, I read continually all the time. It was hard to pry me out of them. But, yeah, you're right. It, when you're in the business, it's work. It's work. And by the time, you know, that the day's over with and you can settle down and do something, your escapes aren't the same as they used to be. So I used to escape into a book, and now I'm like, oh, that sounds like work right now.
Oh,
God, I have to use my brain more,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I'm the same. I mean, I grew up, I always have my nose in a book, but now I but at the end of the day, I just flick the TV on and I will watch anything. I mean, if it's on,
yep.
Especially if I don't, you know, whatever's on, you know, if I don't have to, you know, bother even think to press the button on the remote. And I'll be sat there watching SpongeBob and then realize that my daughter's, she's buggered off upstairs to do something and I'm still watching SpongeBob and I'll just like zone out and it doesn't really matter what, so it's nice if there's something good on, but it doesn't matter because my brain just slips into neutral and off I go, you know, and you need that, you know,
definitely.
I miss reading for fun. I haven't read for fun for such a long time. You know, I'm either reading, you know, submissions or editing or my work or something that, you know, somebody said, oh, you've got to read this in preparation for something else or whatever. It's just like, oh, you know, seriously? Show me a book. I just don't. I mean, to be fair, we have a book. I have a book because my big dog, he's frightened of books for some reason. And if you want him to behave, you just show him the book and he just scampers off his tail between his legs. He's frightened. Aww. He's actually frightened of paperbacks, which is great.
Punishment. I'm going to read to you.
Yes, I'm going to read you chapter 4. No, I won't pee on the floor anymore, Dad. I'm sorry.
Well, I want to hear more about Trinity, and I think we have a audio clip to play, don't we, James?
And, do we?
Right. I think we do. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we do.
I hope you do.
Sorry.
Right.
We have. I just love hearing the panic in Xtina's voice because she's done this to me. She did this to me once. The first time we had an author with a clip, and she mentioned it to me like. Now, you know, so I was getting what? And I had to rapidly download it and get it ready within like a minute. But no, we have it.
Did.
I'm going to play.
He did.
Do you need to intro it for us?
Okay. Let me know. Give me the green light.
Tell us, you know, build it up for us and then we'll play the clip.
Okay. This is Trinity, narrated by Muffy Newtown. It is a brand new audiobook just out last week, and I hope you enjoy it.
And here we go.
To the beginning of the end. I clink the rim of my plastic champagne glass against Janine's. Jen, you're such a drama queen. I'm getting married, not walking the green mile. My dark-haired, blue-eyed best friend chuckles as she takes an indulgent sip. Might as well be. Committing yourself to one man for the rest of your life sounds like a death sentence to me. I swallow a large gulp of the crisp, dry bubbly. Please. She follows suit, draining her glass. Marriage is a sacrament. The happily ever after everyone is so gung-ho about. Is that how you're selling it to yourself? I wipe down the bar top, then straighten the square cork coasters in front of her. I don't have to sell it to myself. I love Jack. He loves me. That's enough of a reason to get the needle. She taps her arm dramatically before wagging her empty glass at me. I pull the corked champagne bottle from the ice bin and pour her refill, a little disturbed. Don't give me that look. She scolds me as she takes another generous sip. We ordered the expensive champagne months ago, right after she and Jack got engaged, and have been keeping it safe for this very night. Why not? I laugh. You just alluded to death by lethal injection and had no issue with it. Because I'm confident in my decision. In Jack. You have way too much faith. I'm a total pessimist. and you don't have enough. I snort cynically. Faith has never proved to do much for me. Jen, I know you've kind of had a shit time of it. She flutters her fake eyelashes. But you had better be careful. With an attitude like that, the only relationship you're ever going to have is with this bar. Might not be such a bad thing. I run my hand over the worn wood. You know my affection for this place. I glance around the room. The weathered restaurant isn't much. A bunch of tables and an open space, scuffed teak floors and dated seaside decor. But the unobstructed ocean view erases all the imperfections. It brings a youthful life to the aging structure and revitalizes a liveliness in me day after day. My faith lies within these four walls. Tell you a secret? I'm not really scared of commitment. I just haven't found a man who can make me feel the way this place does. Safe, home, alive. Janine has been with Jack since high school. She knows his every in and out. Her faith is warranted. He's proved himself to her over and over again. He's her stability. The only stability I've ever had is this restaurant. That's completely unacceptable to me, Jen. Janine hiccups. You need cock to survive. It's as essential as eating. I nearly spit my champagne. She has always spoken her mind, sans filter. Janine Sinclair has been my best friend since we nearly burned down the local high school with a chemistry assignment gone awry. She's responsible for my navel piercing, my tattoo, and my new haircut, a choppy bob with hot pink highlights. I've always had long hair, so I'm still adjusting to the chin-length layered cut. I find myself constantly flipping the pink and platinum bangs out of my eyes. Annoying. I questioned if the atypical color was going to look too outrageous in her wedding pictures, but she just waved me off and foiled my hair. Did I forget to mention she's also my stylist and has bold blue streaks threaded through her own dark locks? Funky is Janine's theme for this wedding. How funky is Janine's theme for her life? What time is Shayna supposed to get here? She asks, close to polishing off her third glass of champagne. Any minute now? I inform her. Good, because I'm ready for you to be done working. I want to get this party started. She shoots off the bar stool and throws her hands up in the air. Oh boy, the bubbly is kicking in. Soon enough, I promise her. Don't go off the deep end too soon. Jack and his posse aren't even here yet. Who needs them? She waves. All I need is you, some awesome music, and lots of this. She swirls her plastic glass, sending splashes of champagne over the brim. Is that all? I toss a bar rag at her so she can clean up the spillage on the floor. Then why did I go to all the trouble of putting a party together? Janine and Jack couldn't really afford separate bachelor and bachelorette parties, so I organized a joint celebration. Because you love me, and I'm worth it, and you have the expensive champagne connections. She leans against the edge of the bar with bright pink cheeks. Yes, all of those things are true.
That was it. It stopped. I was
that
enjoying
was
that.
That's all you got.
I was enjoying that. Have you got the rest of it?
Right?
I do.
That was good. Yay. Oh, I enjoyed that. And I assume that was, audience, sort of family-friendly clip.
That was a family-friendly
I can imagine it gets pretty steamy, but that's brilliant. A
couple more minutes and we would be navigating steamy waters.
If you want to send the rest along, please do. We can play that after hours, with one hand, apparently.
Well, yeah, and exactly. See, I can't get away with saying what I did, but, James, yeah, okay. I see how it is.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, though, reading out loud, do you ever stumble over, the naughty bits if you ever have to or something?
So I never usually read out loud unless it's, by myself in my office. I've never actually read an excerpt out loud. So I'm sure that there would be plenty of blushing and maybe a little bit of giggles.
Yeah.
I would like
you should try it. You should try it. I have written the naughty words. I've written them.
Xtina has written some filth. Absolute
I have.
Filth. You should be
and,
ashamed
you know,
of yourself.
I don't even. I don't even bat an eye, and I went to read an excerpt on the show, and I thought I would be fine. I had even rehearsed it a few times, and I was good. And then I, you know, went to say it on the show, and wow, I'm, you know, I think I'm still blushing from that. I and I'm like, wow. And I had no idea that I was going to react that way. I really didn't. And we have had other guests on the show who. Mentioned the same thing that they have a, you know, a, I don't know, it's weird. Now, James, you read an excerpt from Colton once on the show, and
yes, I
don't
did.
You have, I don't think you have that embarrassment gene at all anywhere.
No, I don't. No. No.
No filter, awesome.
No filter at all. No. None.
It's a commendable awesome. Thing.
Well, you know, in this business, it is. I mean, it's funny. I did a sort of an appearance at a local bookstore months ago, and they wanted me to read bits from each of my books. And it's funny. I came to Flanagan, and I struggled to find a bit that was appropriate to read. But
wow.
when I read it, of course, 18, I couldn't be bothered to read Flanagan. But when I read it, and it is pretty intense stuff, and yeah, like you say, yeah. No filter. I mean, it's just, you know, it's words and da da da. You know, it's which is good. You know, I could read, and you know, people enjoyed it, which was great.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. That's why I think I love audiobooks. Like, I'm a huge audiobook fan, so you know, hearing the words, maybe not my out of my own mouth, but somebody else's, and you know, experience them that way. You know, one of my favorite, that's how I like read lately, is I pop in an audiobook on my way home from work or, you know, winding down at night, and I can just close my eyes and listen and not have to, you know, get caught up in concentrating on anything else. So, which is why
I
gave the audio clip.
Yeah. I've never listened to an audiobook, to be honest.
I have you know,
I was dead set against them. I didn't want to publish them. I didn't like any of them that I listened to, but the narrator really does make the difference. If you get good narrators to, you know, have that voice who you can connect with and is able to have the characters can be conveyed and, you know, the kind of tone that is like, you know, nice to the ear, then it really is an experience. So if you find a good narrator, and I know a bunch because I'm super picky, I think it changes, you know, I think it would totally change every, you know, the way you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I don't disagree totally, but I think for me it's an attention thing. I do remember I had credits or something with that whole Audible, and I picked out a book by one of my favorite authors, and I could not wait. I was so excited. I think I was actually sick, and that, you know, I was thinking, well, you know, I'm sick. I'm just going to lay here and listen to this book. And within a few minutes, I found, you know, my mind was drifting, and I finally ended up going to my Kindle and finding the book on Kindle and reading along as they were reading it to me, and then was like, this is silly. Why don't I just read it? So to me, I do definitely think it was just attention because, you know, it was a good I think it was a good narrator. And now that, you know, now that Hellbound has gone to audiobooks, and I'm on, I'm listening to auditions and stuff like that. It's so cool. And, you know, when the first book went live, you know, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. And I think that it's not even my book, but it felt like it was. It felt like, this is my baby. Look at that, you know. So it is totally cool. It really is. I'm hoping maybe I just need to take my ADHD medication and sit down and listen.
Listen while you're doing something. So you have that, like, half attention, you know, in your ears and, you know, concentrating on something else, it might work.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And, yeah, I heard you, James. You're going to say by ADHD medication you mean alcohol, right? Is that what you were going to say?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah, because
you don't
I really
need insurance
I can't
for that.
Even, No, right? That's awesome. What are you working on now?
So I am working on a super secret project for Read Me Romance, which is actually an audio podcast that Tessa Bailey and Sky Warren have put together. So they're doing a series of independent novellas from a whole bunch of different authors that's free for the listener. You just have to subscribe to the podcast, and you get like a free audio novella every week. So they just actually launched that in the beginning of November. So it's brand new, but it's been, you know, getting great feedback. I think Alexa Riley was the first audiobook that they released, and it's doing really well. So I'm excited for that.
Awesome.
So I'm trying to finish that up by the end of the month. Yep.
I am a big fan of Sky Warren's. I remember reading, I hope I'm right on this, her and Annika Martin did some books together, and that first
mm-hmm.
one, Prisoner, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that was so good.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think anyone's ever made a prisoner look quite as hot as they did, and that was so good.
Dark romance writers, that's what we do.
I know.
We turn it on our heads.
Yeah, with all the different genres in the romance, dark romance is definitely mine. We had Pepper Winters with Q and C.J. Roberts with Caleb, I was like, take me now. Right?
Bad boy lover for life.
I know, definitely. There were definitely some good ones. I do wish I had more time now to read, because now that I'm thinking of all the books out there that I have, you know, downloaded onto my Kindle and never, you know, I'm like, oh, there needs to be more hours in the day or something. We need to add a whole other day of the week. We should do that. We should put in a petition, a day just for reading. Can we do that, James? I think we should do that.
Well, you know, we do that, and then we'll just sort of fill it with other stuff. It would just, wouldn't it? It would just be, I'll do that, you know. It's just, I know. It's like how work seeps into the weekend. I used to be adamant many, many years ago, and the weekend is weekend. And then you think, oh, well, I've got an hour Saturday morning, I've got a bit of time. And before you know it, you know, you're planning, I'll pick that up Saturday or Sunday, and suddenly your weekend's being eaten up, and it's just, it's just never ending. I can't remember the last time I actually had a day. And I'm very rarely sick, that's the thing. I don't have the pleasure of having the flu, so I can have a few days off. I haven't had so much of a sniffle in about 4 years, and it's just not fair, I have to say. You know, I need rabies or something. I need rabies. I can't do that. I need to get have rabies so I can have a few days off, really. So I have to work
you need
on
your
that.
Gallbladder. Okay, maybe have your gallbladder taken out, and you know, then you can. It's like one thing.
How bored do you have to be? I'll have my gallbladder taken out. That's what I'm going to do this weekend. Nothing on the TV.
You'll get your
R&R. That's it. I've finished Hill House. What am I going to do? Have my gallbladder taken out.
Yeah, gallbladder.
There you go.
I will do it, yeah. I can do that.
You don't need that pesky little thing anyway. It's just...
It doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it's just there.
Like a perfect excuse,
it's just there.
You know? It's just there.
Wow. Oh my goodness. You know, I have had my gallbladder taken out, I don't think you'll get a whole lot of recovery time or a whole lot of time off for that. I was up and moving so easily, so quickly, and I remember thinking, I'm going to milk this. This is a surgery. I'm going to milk it, and I'm going to limp around, and I'm going to have people do things for me. And I remember walking. This is when I was in college, and I was walking. And then I realized, oh my gosh, you're not limping. The recovery was like nothing. It was,
Did you not have to take supplements or something? I mean, it produces bile. I mean, it's part of the digestion process. Can you not digest things properly now?
No, I can. I have a little bit of a problem with some fried food, so I try to, you know, tend to stay away from that. But other than that, no, I'm fine. You know, like you said,
seriously?
You don't need that. You don't need it. You don't need it. Yeah, I mean,
I like fried food. To be, being from Yorkshire, everything's because in England, the further north you get, the more fried food you have to eat. So I like my fried. I couldn't imagine life without fried food. So I'm gonna cling on to my gallbladder. Actually,
I'm gonna keep it
for now.
We'll take out a knee.
I'm gonna keep it for now. Hope maybe I get the flu early next year so I can have a week
God.
Off.
What is that thing in your throat? You don't need that thing in your. What is that thing? The oh my gosh, yeah. I haven't been drinking.
Tonsils.
You can have those taken out. Just take those out, yeah.
You know, funny enough, I have all of my body parts. I have everything. Everything I came into the world, I have all of it. I've never broken a bone. I've never had anything removed, except teeth, but I guess because they come out anyway, I suppose. Other than a few, that's it. I'm pretty much as I was. I'm almost
boring is what you're telling me.
Pretty much, No, I'm practically fresh out of the box. I'm almost in mint condition.
I want to keep
mint
her,
condition.
Jim. Can we keep her?
No. What, Maury? No.
Yeah, the next time that we have you on, he is probably going to introduce you as, you know, Maureen Never. He probably will.
My next pen name.
There you go.
Yeah, you can do like
there you
a
go.
Clean. You can do like a clean version of all your stories and publish them under Maureen.
It's going to be my Christian pen name, yes.
There you go. I think that's great.
Excellent.
I hate to say it's about time for the end of our first segment, and thank you so much for coming on, and you have to promise to come back and see us again.
Thank you for having me. I definitely will.
Awesome.
It's been fun, Anne. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I was going to say, real quick, tell us where we can find you online.
Everywhere. Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. If you're Surf It, I'm on it, I'm pretty sure.
Awesome.
You can also go to my website.
I'll get your links put up on our Facebook page. If anybody wants to stalk Em, they can go there and do that. And, again, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I can't wait to have you back.
Thank you. I will definitely be back.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we will see you again. So it's off to the break, and we will be back in 5 minutes and 2 seconds, according to this.
Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Office clerks put up signs saying position closed, and secretaries turn off typewriters and put on their coats, and janitors padlock the gates for security guards to patrol, and bachelors phone up their friends for a drink while the married ones turn on a chat show. And they'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Gentlemen, time please, you know we can't serve anymore. Now the traffic lights change to stop when there's nothing to go. And by 5 o'clock everything's dead, and every third car is a cab, and ignorant people sleep on their butts like the dope white mice in the college lab. And nothing ever happens, nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the start of the song, and we all sing along like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Telephone exchanges click while there's nobody there. The Martians could land in the car park and no one would care. Closed circuit cameras and department stores shoot the same movie every day. And the stars of these films neither die nor get killed, just survive constant action replay. And nothing ever happens, nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the start of the song, and we all sing along like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Advertise products that nobody needs, while anger from Manchester writes to complain about all the repeats on the TV. And computer terminals reports on gains and the values of copper and tin, while American businessmen snap up Van Goghs for the price of a hospital wing. And nothing ever happens, nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the start of the song, and we all sing along like before. And nothing ever happens, nothing happens at all. They'll burn down the synagogues at 6 o'clock, and we'll all go along like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow.
Welcome back to part two.
I think we're back. I think we had a bit of a thing going on there. So apologies for that. I don't know what went wrong. Hello.
Hi. You know,
what
it would not
there?
Be a show. Yeah, it would not be a show
did we not have the music and everything?
No, we did. We did. We had a song. I was, you know, dancing to the song, and then I just wasn't
was
there.
Was
like,
it a good one?
Yeah.
Was it a good one? What was it?
Sure. It was great.
You don't know what you've done.
I don't know.
No,
what it
was. I must have been longer than I expected. I do apologize. I actually took my daughter into bed. So
both of us were gone. See, you know, every week it seems like I do have that thing where nobody can hear me, and it was something like that, and I wasn't there, so I went to call, but I didn't know you weren't there, too. You know, it's got to be something every week, so we're just going to have to add that in as our surprise element of the week or something.
Yeah, that's, well, I'll tell you something, you know who I blame.
In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
And that, wow, of course, was every world leader laughing at the President of the United States. So, you know, obviously, there's a lot of political hoo-ha going over in England at the moment. So I think both countries are just in a mess, really. It's just...
Yeah, definitely.
Frightening. It's really frightening. Mm.
I don't think that everyone is laughing. Not the way that, you know, the whole world laughs at Trump, though. I don't think so.
No, I mean, England people just look at it like, what the hell is this mess going? The whole Brexit thing is an absolute shower at the moment. In fact, the government is on the verge of collapse. It's that bad at the moment, literally.
Wow.
You know, and the Prime Minister she's hanging on to a job literally by her fingernails. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But, it's an ass all over across the board at the moment. Across the board. Still, never mind, eh? Never mind, eh? It could be worse.
Yeah.
It could be. I'm not sure it could be worse, but it could. I mean, you know, it's funny, actually, I was actually talking to my son, actually. I took him to soccer practice this evening, and we were on about something. I said, we're on about the Brexit thing. I said, well, you know, at least they don't have Donald Trump as a president. So, you know, all's not bad over there. I can't think of anything worse than that. But bless him. But he's great comedy value. I mean, the political comedians, the political commentators, they're lazy now. They don't have to spend a lot of time
or spend a lot of
money with script writers and joke writers to come up with jokes. They just play a clip of Trump and the laughs come.
Yeah.
Anyway, he just opens his mouth.
Do.
You don't have
to
put a spin on it. And it's just that it's not doctored. That is what the guy said. And it's funny.
it's just funny. Tragic. Yes, I know. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that maybe I wouldn't drink as much, but you know, no, I can't.
No, I would.
But you know, maybe I wouldn't laugh at it. Maybe if I were sober, but because it's almost too out there to even be believed. You know, some of the things that he says, I'm like, he did not say that, but he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is like Seth Rogen movie or, you know, something that Armando Iannucci would write. You know, funny enough, if you want to watch something good, call it intelligent political comedy, Armando Iannucci, who is responsible for Veep. I don't know if you've ever seen Veep. Brilliantly funny TV show. He's Brit. He's famous for the Alan Partridge Show back in England. His movie, The Death of Stalin, which is actually about the death of Stalin and is rooted in fact, is absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's not horror, but it is. It's a great political comedy, and it's kind of farcical as well. But it is incredibly well. I love the guy's work. I mean, he's an absolute genius comedy writer. I mean, if I could write half as well as he could, you know, comedy wise, then I'd be writing comedy and not horror, I have to say. But another tip for when you finish Hill House: dig out Death of Stalin and watch it.
Awesome. All right. There's a lot of things on my list right now. I can't wait to catch up with. I had started Sharp Objects, and because I loved a couple of the books that I read by Gillian mm-hmm. Flynn, so I couldn't wait to start the show. And I think I made it like 2 episodes in, which I think is good. I just don't watch that much TV. So.
Oh no! Do you know you recommended that? I haven't even. It is on my list. We finished Hill House. I'm keeping up with American Horror Story. The finale was last night. I've DVR'd it. Got to watch that sometime. Mm-hmm. But I'm into the new season of Channel Zero, which is The Dream Door, which is brilliant. It's brilliant.
Awesome. I have to put that on my list,
there's another
too.
One. Put it on the list. Put it on
okay,
the list.
Okay, I will.
And speaking of lists, which guest is next on our list, XD? Was that
next...
smooth? Wasn't that,
that was.
Smooth? What a segue.
That was.
Who have we got?
I like that. Yeah. Our
Thank
next
you.
Guest, we have science fiction, fantasy, and horror author Andrew Piazza. Woo! Yeah, push the button.
Oh, fool you. What button? Oh, yeah, this one. Yeah. Andrew, how are you, sir?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Oh, obviously, we're doing incredibly unprofessionally tonight. I have to, you know, we have a week off and we've just gone to pot. We really have. It's just, what is going on? What buttons to press? You know, do I have to come back on air after the half time break? I mean, Xtina buggers off and doesn't even know what song was on. It's a shambles. It's a shambles. Yeah, brilliant. Well, welcome to the show. And
and you know, usually when we have some kind of mess up, James will say, "We'll take that out in post," and he doesn't really mean it, but he didn't even say it this week. So it's just like, oh well, you know. I mean, it's a week before a holiday, so we're just, you know, whatever. Whatever happens, happens tonight.
We'll keep it in.
Not going to even.
It is all
not
part
even
of
bother
the
with the empty promises.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly.
No.
Why bother? Yeah. So did I pronounce your name right? I have several,
yes.
You know, okay, great. I have actually a few Facebook friends with the same last name, and I'm always like, is that how you say it? So I'm glad I got it right. Andrew Piazza. I like that.
Yeah.
And you are here.
If you're technically speaking Italian, the double Z has an implied T, so it would be Piazza. But since we're Americans and we're just mangling, you know, languages into whatever we want anyway, we're going to stick with Piazza.
Awesome. And now I want to say with the T there, Piazza. I like that. Okay. That's awesome. In my head now, that's what it's going to be.
not Maureen, then?
No.
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 Okay.
So you are here to talk to us about your book, One Last Gasp, which I think that is a pretty cool title, to be honest. And tagline, see, James usually does this part, but I'm doing it now. Look at there. Tagline, a horror novel set during World War II, and there are worse horrors than evil that men do. I like that. What evils, what is worse than what men do? Because they're horrible. Men are horrible. Actually, it's people are pretty horrible.
Not as horrible as women, I have to say, but...
I know. See, I changed it to people. I did. People, humans, we are awful. We are.
We are.
The book started off as a sort of a mental exercise to see if I could mash up a World War II horror story, or World War II war story, with a what ended up being a Lovecraftian horror story. So it ended up being a really good match. The experiment worked really well. I started it off not knowing how it was going to go, not knowing how it was going to turn out, and it was really kind of gratifying to see how well they meshed up. So I'm sure you're familiar with the works of H.P. Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm.
As many, I'm sure you and many of your listeners know, his particular brand of horror centered around what is usually thought of as cosmic terror is one of the terms that they use. And so it's this idea that human beings are this sort of infinitesimally small and meaningless speck in the midst of the universe, and there are these great and massive elder gods out there that are capable of crushing the entire species. They just haven't noticed us yet. And so it's usually this sense of being tiny and insignificant in the face of a giant universe. And I think that comes, I think that stems from just a basic existential terror that people started having. Let's see, Lovecraft was writing in about, the 20s and 30s or so, and so we're getting into a time, where science is really starting to pick up and take over, and people are starting to leave behind faith more and more and starting to rely on science more and more. And often we see Lovecraft's protagonists are either journalists or scientists who are tinkering about and then discover something that ends up being horrible and drives them insane. And I think that taps into the as one starts to walk away from faith and starts going into more of the sort of cut and dried science, one of the dangers is you can go kind of down a nihilistic road. It's interesting. Nowadays, you can hear a lot about, there's almost a movement of atheists. Have you noticed this? Where it's, you know, an atheist is simply someone who doesn't necessarily believe in God or believe in religion, but there is a group that kind of almost makes it their own religion to be atheist. And one of the interesting arguments that comes up counter to that is, well, how are we to find any sort of solace in science if we're all just essentially meat computers, you know, and there is no great meaning? And I think there's a great sort of existential terror that's at the center of Lovecraft's writing, where it's this idea of what if it all just means nothing? What if we all are just insignificant? So getting to the war story and how that kind of lines up, one of the things I read a lot about as I was researching this book was the attitudes of soldiers, not just in World War II, but in pretty much every conflict, that they went through a sort of, they went through a process where they first arrived in the theater of war with a sort of cocky attitude. And remember, these are mostly young men, you know. I think we can all remember back to being 18, 19 years old and being invincible and invulnerable and nothing could possibly go wrong. And so they would approach this entire affair with the idea of nothing can happen. Nothing bad can happen to me. I'm too good looking. I'm too smart. I'm too clever.
Too young. You know, too young.
Exactly. Too young to die. And then they get into the theater of war and they start seeing some pretty nasty stuff and they start saying to themselves, well, it could happen to me, but it won't because I'm too well trained. I'm surrounded by other good troops. And then they continue to see a lot of bad things happen to people all around them. And they eventually come to the realization, oh, it can happen to me and it will happen to me. And there's a sort of, again, a sort of existential terror there of I'm not so special after all, that I'm just this tiny thing in the face of a vast and uncaring universe. Or in this case, a vast uncaring power, that being warfare, that kind of lined up really well as I wrote the book through. So it ended up being a really good mashup.
Wow. I want to hear more. Do you have a reading for us?
I do. It's a brief one. I'm just going to read the first, let's see here, it's the first two pages or so. Let me just open up here. Okay, are we all set?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's all yours.
Okay. I am the only surviving member of 1st Battalion, 518th Parachute Infantry Regiment, 101st Airborne Division, Army of the United States. My unit was decimated in the Ardennes Forest during the winter of 1944 to 1945 by enemies both human and otherwise. This account has been a long time coming. I don't really know how to explain that. Part of it is the nature of the beast. My generation is particularly reluctant to dwell on what we've done, especially how we felt about doing it. We had a job to do, and we did it, over and done with. Maybe it's just the way we were brought up. Maybe it's just me. It's dangerous for one man to speak for a generation. Part of my delay has to do with the nature of what happened in those snow-covered woods all those years ago. War is surreal by nature. It's hard enough to try to describe what it was like to begin with, much less talk about the things we found and saw and fought in Dom Cairn without sounding insane or senile or both. Maybe you won't believe me. Hell, there's already guys who say the Holocaust never happened, and I saw that too. part of it is the nightmares in which dark shapes huddling just out of sight in the mists murmur warbling commands in a language no human has ever spoken. I don't understand the words per se, but the meaning is clear. Keep your mouth shut. I guess the reason I'm writing this at all is my fading memory. My memory has become my blessing and my curse. It's getting so that I can't always remember what it is I did today or the day before or even what I was in the middle of doing. Those days, though, those days I can remember almost photographically. Every day from when I signed up for the Army all the way through jump school and the drops on Normandy and Holland and then the Bulge and all the rest until we ended up the war at the Eagle's Nest, Hitler's mountain refuge in Austria. Remembering those days at Dom Cairn is a curse. It will be a blessing when this Alzheimer's or whatever it is that's eating my memories gets around to lunching on January 1945. For those of you that don't know history, it was the tail end of the Battle of the Bulge, the biggest battle ever fought by the U.S. Army. It involved over a million men stretched along a front hundreds of miles long. Hitler made a last gasp offensive for Antwerp with an army that was already considered defeated. It was a doomed damn fool gamble, and a lot of men got killed for it. But then old Adolf had a knack for getting people killed, didn't he? Sometimes it's dangerous for one man to speak for a country. After we held off the Bastogne, the 101st was immediately ordered to assist in pushing the Germans back. There would be no rest for the airborne. In early January, we were holed up in the woods near a tiny village to the west of Noville. I never did find out its name. It was frigid cold and dirty and terrifying, mostly terrifying because we were waiting for a German counterattack. They always counterattacked. The war got truly terrifying after the attack came. It started with an artillery barrage. And that's
wow.
The end of chapter one.
Wow.
That was awesome.
You know, yeah, and
oh,
you read
you.
It.
Thank you.
So good.
Yeah, beautifully, beautifully read as well. Beautifully read.
Well, I'm very glad that you said that because I just picked up a big, fat, expensive microphone with the thought that I will narrate the audiobook myself. So I was having mixed feelings about
brilliant.
Whether or not that was a good idea.
I would listen. You know, it's
definitely no. That was very good. That was very good.
It's such great storytelling. I mean, you know, I personally never been too, you know, interested in war stuff, even movies when it comes to the war. I'm like, no, but it's not really for me. But I was hanging on your every word. That was great. And I want to know more. I want to know what the horrors are that they see and stuff. That was awesome. That was great. So, and yeah, I've been listening to, you know, all these auditions for people that are, you know, trying out for different audio books and, you know, I'll have to talk to you later about some of our Hellbound books. That was good.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to, you mentioned not always being so much into war stories. I think that the key with a lot of, with writing a war story in such a way that's accessible across the board is to really focus on these people is not as killing machines or as so, but as human beings and focusing on
them as humans. Yeah.
Yeah. What they're going through and their emotions and their, and a lot of that sort of thing are the narrator of this book is very much an everyman who kind of go, I mean, he is an elite soldier in that he's in the 101st Airborne, but you know, you see him kind of going through moments where he's scared, moments where he's tired, but also moments where he is enraged or, you know, on a roll as far as spoiling for a fight. So he kind of goes all over the place, as I think human beings do.
Yeah. You mentioned research for the book. I can't imagine how much research went into it. How long did it take?
The entire process it took about a year to write the novel. It's a fairly long novel. It's 152,000 words or so. So it's it's a good sized novel. I have a good sized shelf of my bookcase now dedicated to all World War II stuff, and I am the proud owner of books with exciting names like U.S. Army Handbook 1939 to 1945 and
wow.
the Encyclopedia of Weapons of World War II and things like that. So, a lot of reading. But then again, luckily enough, I am a recovering World War II history addict. So, you know, it just allowed me to indulge that a little bit.
Yeah. And question for you, as well as our first guest, I'd like to know, who do you like to read when you're not writing?
It really varies. You know, it depends what kind of mood I'm in, and sometimes it also depends on what I'm writing at the time. Sometimes you want to read someone who is going to compliment the kinds of things that you're writing or the kinds of things that you're concerned about as far as your writing style. As an example, if I'm thinking about, I want to really make sure my dialogue's on point, I like to go back and read some old Elmore Leonard, who I think is just excellent with dialogue. There's a reason why so many of his books have been made into TV shows and movies. It's because he focuses so much on his dialogue. In fact, I think in one of his interviews he said he focuses so much on the dialogue because he realized that sometimes readers will kind of skim through prose, but they'll pay closer attention to the dialogue. So he just, I'll just make it lots of dialogue.
Definitely. I think I'm that. Well, you know, I read everything. I do. So, but yeah, I definitely love the and I've noticed this too with a lot of writers. You have a writer who, you know, is excellent with dialogue and not as good with, you know, the other parts, and then, you know, the narrating, and then just the opposite. Like, I find it really few and far between where I can, you know, read an author that I, you know, has excellent dialogue, and it's really good with the narrating too. And I think that's something that not everybody can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes you want to read something that's going to put you in the right mood for what you're writing. And sometimes you want to avoid authors that you might like, but you might like them so much that you're worried that their style might start creeping into your own as you're starting to write.
Right. And we've had authors on the show that will say that when they're writing, they actually don't do much reading because they don't want it to influence, you know, what it is that they're writing. And I think that it's kind of the same thing for me when if I'm writing a lot, I won't read as much. And I think it is for that reason. I don't want to go back and read something of mine and go, oh my gosh, that sounds like, you know, so and so or something. So you gotta be careful.
I think it's a helpful thing to read, you know, in between projects, or especially when you're going back and doing some editing, that can be good to do. Like I said, you know, try to read through some authors who are really strong in some areas that you might be concerned about, and then you can read back through your rough draft or whichever draft you might be in at the time with that kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what are you working on now?
So right now I'm in about two-thirds of the way through the rough draft of book 3 of an urban fantasy series. This is an urban fantasy series called Mage Hunters. I jokingly say that it's what happens if Judge Dredd was in the Harry Potter universe.
Oh, wow.
So it's SWAT.
I would pay to see that. Definitely.
It's basically SWAT teams versus rogue wizards.
Wow.
And it started off with a novella that I wrote a while ago that I just wrote as a one-off with no thought to actually turning into a series. But I had a bunch of people asking about, hey, when's there going to be a follow-up? Or they were just, you know, very interested in that world that was created. And I found I kept thinking about it as well. And so earlier this year, I came up with a concept for a book 2, and so wrote it out, and it worked. And then I'm in the middle of book three. It goes slow because I like to experiment with stuff. I'm one of those types, and I experimented with a different style in which I change point of view from chapter to chapter. It starts, it'll be a chapter in third person, and then a chapter in first person, and then back to third person, back to first person. And the first person perspectives are different people. They're not always the same. So I wanted to see if I could make that work, and it worked out pretty well the first time. Of course, now if you're going to write a series, you have to maintain that style. It's a lot of fun to write, and you get it has the advantages of really being able to do a deep dive into a lot of different parts of the world and parts of the characterization. But it's a pain in the ass to write. So I'm in the midst of writing book three of that series.
Awesome. I have missed our 11 questions segment. So would you do 11 questions with me, Andrew?
Only 11. I will not do 12. I refuse. 12 is too many.
Well,
I demand overtime pay for 12.
The funny story about 11 questions is that I'm looking at them, and I think there are 12, but we call them 11 questions. And for the first year, it was called 11 questions, and there were only 10. So I think James just likes to mess with me. So, I guess I can pick one of the questions to eliminate if you'll only do 11. But maybe you won't be counting, so, you won't even know we didn't. We did 12.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I am easily distracted, so.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Do you have a button,
number one.
James?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Awesome.
And now, 11 questions.
Okay, number one, the best or worst movie that you ever saw?
The best or worst movie? I just saw a terrible one on Netflix, and I can't remember its name, but I've got to tell you about it because it was so incredibly horrible that I had to tell everybody. And it's with Steven Seagal and Mike Tyson are in it. And it's a Chinese movie, and it's set in Africa. And apparently it centers around a guy who's trying to sell cell phone service, and somehow he gets embroiled in a African civil war. And Mike Tyson fights Steven Seagal. And Steven Seagal, I'm not even sure why his character's in the whole story. And things just randomly happen. It makes me zero
sense. Really does sound dreadful. It sounds awful.
It's so bad that it's jaw
it's
black. Unbelievable.
When you do remember what it's called, you'll have to phone into the show to let us all know. We need
to warn people. Yeah. Warn
people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What was your very first grown-up horror novel that you read?
Grown-up horror novel that I read? Very first. I'm not sure. I started reading at a very young age. I can tell you the first book that I can remember reading that scared the crap out of me, which was Salem's Lot by Stephen King.
That's a good one. Yes.
I can vividly remember scaring me.
Awesome. Let's see. Oh, what is the worst way you can imagine yourself dying?
Oh, well, as a horror writer, this is something you put a lot of thought into. Yeah, it would probably be something horrid. Yeah, well, it would have to be slow. It would probably be something along the lines of, like, being slowly eaten away by acid.
Oh, wow. You have thought about this one. Okay, all right.
moving on.
Yeah. If you were God for a day, what would you do?
Oh, boy. travel.
Hey, travel, that's not a bad
travel
answer.
Travel throughout the universe. Yeah. Travel throughout
that's,
the universe. And
I call a shotgun. I do. That's a good idea. I like that. And this one, anytime I ask one of the horror writers this one, I'm a little squeamish, but I have to ask. If it were legal to do so, would you eat human flesh?
No.
Thank you.
No, I just don't think that there's let me just say the law isn't what's holding me back on that one.
Right? I'm with you 100% on that one. Let's see, which franchise is your favorite? Halloween, Friday the 13th, Elm Street, Hellraiser, or Saw?
Okay, let me think through for a sec. Well, you know what? So many of those have really strong first movies that then kind of get so diluted by, like, essentially the Rocky effect, you know? By Rocky VI, I think we all know what's going to happen.
No surprises
so
left.
It becomes cartoonish after what starts off. Like, the first Saw was, I remember seeing that and thinking that was just phenomenal. I just loved it. But then it started to become almost a caricature of itself after a while. Same thing with Hellraiser. Wow, boy, kind of all of those, I guess, are pretty good examples of really strong first movies that kind of just got worked to death.
Yeah.
I would probably pick Saw just because I liked the first one so much.
Good answer. Not many people pick that one, actually. It's usually a toss-up between, like, Halloween and Friday the 13th, I think, pretty much. But that's a good answer because that first one was very original. We did not get to do the whole 11 questions, but this I do have to ask the bonus question. Baseball or stamp collection?
Baseball.
Yes. Yes. We're going to have to bring you back so me and you can talk about baseball and James can take a nap.
Specifically Philadelphia Phillies.
I can't, we'll have to discuss that and battle it out on the next show that you're on because I'm a huge Toronto Blue Jays fan. That's go Blue Jays. And I'm not Canadian, so that makes it weird. But there you have it. We are out of time for our show, and I want to thank you so much for coming on, Andrew. This was great. And you have to promise to come back and see us.
I'd love to. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. And, yeah, I will definitely be stalking you. And James was doing the crazy robot voice thing that he does every show, and so he told me it's time to start wrapping it up. So this is the time of the night when James would tell me to say goodnight, X-Tina. So goodnight, X-Tina.
Good night.
Oh, yeah, I'm the pretender. One can tell. Oh, yeah, I'm the great pretender. Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to dream all alone.
Feel what my heart.
like a clown. Pretend that you're, pretend that you're still around.
Like a cloud.